Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Damage Report. I am John Iderola. And we've got a lot that we're going to be covering today. Obviously, huge news updates on the disappearance and likely murder of Jamal Khashoggi and Donald Trump's both response to it and his defense over his relationship with Saudi Arabia, which he implies is non-financial in nature. We're going to look into that and see how much truth there is to that. There's another awesome ad attacking Ted Cruz in his Senate race against Beto O'Rourke. And much, much more. I do want to introduce Ben Mankiewicz back in studio. It's been a little while.
I've been traveling. Good to be back. Welcome.
You've been doing your show.
Yeah, on Turner Classic Movies. But I miss talking about politics, so I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and
I'd rather be doing a different show, but this is the one that was available.
What you were invited to, and you're hoping to move up, as we both are.
Right. Well, one of us has real prospects.
I think so. Okay, so look, we have a lot of news that we're going to get to. I just want to briefly mention, I probably should tell the control room this. I woke up and I was enraged. Trump's Twitter some days, man. So he resumed his attacks against Elizabeth Warren, used Pocahontas again multiple times. So DNA tests be damned, doesn't matter. And then the president of our country called an adult film star that he apparently had an affair with, horse face on Twitter.
Nailed it. Yeah.
He called her horse. What a classic lame high school guy thing to do.
Total horse face.
Yeah. You slept with her. That's what you wanted to do. You wanted to cheat on your wife who just given birth to one of your kids. Classy move. You slept with her because you thought she was so attractive. And now she's a horse face.
Yeah, I don't think you need to explain it, but I got you. I think you had them.
No, I need to say it because right. I just am so filled with rage at the state of our country and the choices we've made.
I just think you had him at horse face.
Okay, that's true. Yeah. Well, and she had him at Game On Tiny and talked about his shortcomings. Here's the thing, if you have a small penis and you start calling horse face, the women that he slept with, they might respond. Yeah. And so,
I tell you though, like Elizabeth Warren, these are battles being fought on Donald Trump's terms.
Yes.
DNA tests. I'm one, I'm Indian. Mm-hmm. Yay. Like that. To me, that was a big loss for Elizabeth Warren and a loss for Democrats.
The belief that.
You took the DNA test. I mean, I know there were a lot of right wingers out there. I can't believe he owned the libs. In this case, I sort of thought, he kind of did. I mean, I don't know what the response is to this guy, but I wouldn't have ignored it. I'd have said, I'll release the DNA test when you release your taxes, liar.
Well, she did say that after the DNA test.
But with Trump, you learn to say it 1,000 times, And
I think it's a lose-lose.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
he's going to call her Pocahontas on the debate stage if she's the nominee. 100 right. times, yeah, over so, and over and over, he's going to call her Pocahontas.
Right, so we have to have she has to have a response to that. And I would have to echo the thoughts of many establishment Democrats, are you so busy on, November 9th or November 10th that you couldn't have released the DNA test results then?
Yeah, I probably would have done that. Yeah, that's true.
You got something going on Friday the 9th?
Yeah. Look, it's a tough position that you're put in when, you say she has to have a response. Obviously, this wasn't it. I don't know what it would be, though, because there is a level that a person can descend to that I don't know what you're supposed to say.
Yeah.
And the thing is, okay, so here he's saying Pocahontas. So there's a word we can't say because we're on YouTube TV. It starts with a C and it's 4 letters long. If he stood on the stage and called her that repeatedly, his fans would love it. That's where we're at as a country. There is nothing he could say that would turn his fans off. Do you respond to that?
I got news for you. That would lose some people.
You think?
I do. I think
grab them by that doesn't tread the same territory?
Nope.
Calling the woman horse face?
Just saying that's one of the things he'd have to, he'd come to regret it, of course, but he'd backpedal and he'd apologize.
He mocked Christine Blasey Ford. I don't know. I don't know if there's any depth that he can't go to that would, that people wouldn't follow him.
Well, I mean, first of all, depends on what we're talking. People will follow him? Yeah, millions. Millions. Uh-huh. Tens of millions will. I'm just saying that one would lose some.
Well, the way get I think, ready.
Yeah. The way we're counting on, that we're hoping that some people were lost over the Ford hearings. It also, mm-hmm. in some places, clearly re-energized people.
Which is one of the
most depressing things ever. Why Michael Shore and I yesterday had a conversation where we predicted what would happen on Election Day with sort of the most realistically lousy results possible. Mm-hmm. And we finished the conversation and we're like, you know, we were kidding and we may have just gone 10 for 10. Like mm-hmm. everything we said sounded—
For this election?
For this election. Can I give you a couple?
Okay.
All right. So, oh, we won 22 seats in the House. Maybe there's a power sharing agreement. We really showed Trump. It's a big— Right. We're down 219 to 216. We almost took it. That's a huge say. The resistance is alive. In a year where Republicans had the map clearly favored Republicans, they only picked up 2 Senate seats. Right?
Oh.
Right? God. And then after some terrible thing happens to some other Supreme Court Justice, Doug Jones, who's up in 2020, you know, first of all, he's going to get nearly 45% of the vote, which is saying a lot in a state like Alabama. And when Doug Jones votes for that next nominee, he's like, look, I don't think that this nominee is the right choice for the Supreme Court, but he's not Brett Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. He's more qualified than that. And ultimately, the president gets to make his choices. And then Doug Jones still gets 44% of the vote and loses in 2020. And so it's 6-3 on the Supreme Court, no House, a worse Senate. But the resistance is alive. It's a battle, John. It's a war, and we are ultimately going to win the war. And we were laughing at and then all the other, you know, and Phil Breeden said, oh my God, 47% of the vote in Tennessee. That's amazing for a Democrat, right? And a couple other things. And afterwards, we're like,
we need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
You know, not...
Yeah. Impossible.
That's quite possibly what Election Day is going to look
that
like.
That is like gazing into the void.
Right.
Yeah, that's not good. Finally, on the...
You know, 219, 216, with the pickups, we could get to within one, really... We'd share with them. Yeah. Why won't they share power with us?
Yeah. Yeah. You and Michael will be arguing back and forth about this as I swing from a rope.
Right.
So anyway, but finally on the horse face thing, as Jordan Ull pointed out on Twitter, I can't wait for all the people who were shocked and chagrined over Michelle Wolf's smoky eyeshadow comment to come to Stormy Daniels' defense here.
Right.
But of course, they're not going to because she's attacking Trump. Also, she is involved in the sex trade and those women don't count for anything to most of this country. Okay, so Ted Cruz running against Beto O'Rourke. A lot of ads coming out, obviously. Huge amounts of money being spent in this race. Some of the best ads, though, not official ads of the campaigns. We've already shown you one. Here is another.
A triple meat Whataburger liberal? What does that even mean, Ted? I mean, everybody I know in Texas likes Whataburger.
Just as a consumer, I'm a big fan of eating White Castle burgers. I like their little burgers.
I don't even know what that is. There's not a White Castle within 900 miles of Texas, Ted. Maybe up in Canada, huh? But not in Texas.
Political ad paid for by FTC PAC, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Come on, Ted.
So this is in response to Ted calling Beto O'Rourke a triple meat Whataburger liberal. What? I mean, there's a lot of cell phones going around, but saying that the man who's run against you, he's triple meat.
Yeah, totally.
What are you talking about?
And, like, of a,
and I like of a the tiny burger.
Of a popular fast food chain in Texas. And then you've touted a fast food chain that isn't in Texas.
Exactly. And I lived in Texas for 5 or 6 years. I lived in Austin, though. It was incredibly popular. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I was in the Austin bubble. But I think it's big across Texas.
The Whataburger?
Yeah.
Of course.
So identifying him as like the meatiest, biggest version of a popular chain, I don't know what you're talking about, Ted.
That was a good ad, but that reminded me of one of the other things Michael and I talked about, which is that right after Election Day, we're like, you know what? Don't count out Beto O'Rourke. He's got a big future in the Democratic Party.
Oh, my God, Jesus.
This is not the last we're going to hear from Beto O'Rourke. That's what we're going to be saying on Tuesday the 6th.
Okay, so super fast. There's a debate happening tonight.
Texas is going to turn blue soon.
Some have been hearing this echoing through eternity. So Beto O'Rourke, Ted Cruz, they are having their debate tonight. We're actually going to be covering it tonight, 8:45 Eastern time at tyt.com/members live. It's going to be myself and Cenk Uygur. It is specifically for the members. I covered the first with Brooke a couple of weeks ago. Did not like Beto O'Rourke's performance there. He's down by 7 in the most recent poll. What do you think that Beto O'Rourke needs to do at tonight's debate?
Be incredibly appealing. You know, be himself.
Don't be aggressive and on the attack?
No, I don't know. I mean, if that works for him, then yes. But it has to sort of be, you know, his thing is authenticity. There's a Beto-ness that worked, I think, and it works personally, and it works on the campaign stump. But no, I mean, don't little asides, little gotcha lines. Roll, you know, the whatever Beto's version of Al Gore's eye rolls. Those aren't. You know, just be yourself, man. If there's a time to attack, you attack. If there's a time, mostly though, state your case, state it passionately about, you know, he's going to call me a socialist. Let me tell you what that means in reality.
Yeah.
And then explain about universal health care and $15 an hour and your job staying here and protecting your jobs as best we can. Talk about that. Talk about infrastructure. Don't you think
that his goal should be to unman Ted Cruz on stage?
No, I mean, people know Ted Cruz. You are not going to change people's opinions about Ted Cruz in Texas. Mm-hmm. He is a majorly known entity. You have got to convince whatever undecided voters there are or whatever voters who think instinctively, I don't like Ted Cruz, and nobody else does either, that they're not taking some giant, crazy political risk by... Mm-hmm. And they've been told that it's a giant political risk to vote for you, right?
He will say it during the debate.
You're a socialist, and you're going to turn Texas and the United States into Venezuela, right? So you say that's insane. Here's what I'm going to do. Okay. Here's what this America is going to look like.
Okay, I found that somewhat persuasive.
Now you'd vote for Beto? You were one of those swing voters.
In terms of what his strategy should be, because I have been very much of the idea that he needs to go on the attack. Like Ted Cruz, I think unchallenged is obviously likely to win.
Real quick, I don't think debates. Going on the attack in a debate is not like going on an attack in general. I think you should attack Ted Cruz in ads. He can attack him on the stump. He can attack. But when you're right there with the, you know, it's a false environment. Uh-huh. You on stage with the cameras on you and a quiet crowd, the attacks look different. So, you know, what it means to attack somebody on stage is very different than what it means to lead an aggressive campaign. His campaign should be incredibly aggressive. Aggressiveness in that format is fraught with peril because people will make decisions about what kind of person you are when you do that. So if you're going to do it, you've got to be great at it.
I do expect that Ted Cruz is going to be aggressive as he was in the first one, but we will
but
see
that's
later
his
on
persona.
Yeah. Okay, we do have to go to our first break. When we come back, though, Saudi Arabia, Donald Trump implying that he has no longstanding financial record with them. Unfortunately, we've got the receipts. So it has now been several weeks. Jamal Khashoggi, obviously, I think we can all agree at this point, was murdered. There had been an attempt to pretend that maybe he had just snuck away. Pretty clear now that he was actually killed. And in fact, Turkish officials this morning telling the AP that police found evidence in the Saudi consulate that he had been killed there. If you were watching the show yesterday, we showed you a photo of a cleaning crew showing up shortly before the investigators got there. I would assume that the consulate would have a normal cleaning crew, so I'm not sure how significant that is. But obviously, there's been an attempt to conceal what actually happened there. There had been news yesterday that the Saudi regime was prepared to come forward and say that this was an interrogation gone wrong, obviously undercutting their many lies over the past week plus. And I had a debate this morning.
He went in to get a marriage license, right?
Yeah. And then this team of 15 people, which seems large for an interrogation, apparently took him and were interrogating him, and he died. So that is their defense to the charge that they murdered him, that no, they were torturing him and he died from it, which that doesn't seem like much of a defense to me.
It's weird to—
That's what they're saying.
It's weird to a guy who's going to get a marriage license and you want to ask him some questions, theoretically, even want to interrogate him, and you're like, Larry, did you bring the bone saw?
Yeah.
Yeah. I never go to an interrogation without a bone saw, because you never know.
Well, there's we've all known the guy that wants to carry a knife everywhere for no reason. He doesn't need it, but he wants to be a guy that needs a knife. Maybe there's a guy like that with a bone saw, but probably not.
I have not ever known that guy.
I've known guys like that. Yeah. It's like the guy that wants an excuse to take off his shirt.
I don't know. Thankfully, I don't
really
know
that. Not the same guy?
Well, I do. I guess I sort of know that.
Pierce Morgan. Anyway, okay, so look, there's other news coming from this because it's becoming more and more clear what happened there. I mean, I think we knew quite a while ago, and they're coming closer in Saudi Arabia to admitting it. But obviously, they're going to attempt to shield Mohammed bin Salman and the rest of the ruling regime from any sort of culpability for this. They don't want, that's where that rogue killers line came from that Donald Trump just willingly provided PR for yesterday.
I'm sure that happens a lot in Saudi Arabia, that sort of at a Saudi consulate, that people connected with the government just go off and do their own thing in defiance of the royal family. It seems like the kind of country where that sort of thing happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of just letting things slide in Saudi Arabia. So because it's so clear, why is it that Donald Trump is so unwilling to talk seriously about any sort of consequences for this? I mean, other Republicans are, Marco Rubio even. Bernie Sanders is
Lindsey Graham said I'd sanction the hell out of him.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's some ringtone right there.
Jim Rockford is calling.
There will be consequences. There will be hell to pay for your ringtone. But Donald Trump, he doesn't speak like that. He's been incredibly defensive, saying, we don't know. He keeps stressing that this guy wasn't a citizen, as if that means that we shouldn't care what happened to him. Today he said this: for the record, I have no financial interest in Saudi Arabia, or Russia for that matter. Any suggestion that I have is just more fake news, of which there is plenty. Well, there is plenty of news, not fake news necessarily, but when he says he has no financial incentives, let's talk a little bit about his history with Russia. In 1991, as he was teetering on personal bankruptcy and scrambling to raise cash, he sold his yacht to Saudi billionaire Prince Al-Walid bin Talal for $20 million, a third less than what he reportedly paid for it.
Nice.
Another great deal. 4 years later, that same prince was involved in a $325 million deal for Mr. Trump's money-losing Plaza Hotel. And then we turn to public citizen that has done a great job of going through a great deal of financial disclosure forms. Saudi embassy has spent at least $270,000 at Trump's Washington Hotel just since the election. In 2001, he sold the entire floor of Trump World Tower to the Saudis. That remains in their ownership right now.
When in 2001? 2001, a significant year to sell stuff to the Saudis.
That is certainly true. So far, I'm assuming earlier, just statistically, it's likely. They still own that, though. In the years before becoming president, he pursued deals with Saudi investors to build hotels in Saudi Arabia. In August 2015, then-candidate Trump registered new corporations to manage a prospective hotel in the Saudi city of Jeddah. In 2005, he boasted about his dealings with the Saudi. 2015, sorry. Saudi Arabia, I get along with all of them. They buy apartments from me. They spend $40 million, $50 million. Am I supposed to dislike them? I like them very much. This reminds me of the Bolsonaro thing.
I know it doesn't mean it like this, but I mean just the kind of person he is. It's Saudi Arabia, I get along with all of them. Uh-huh. Talks that way.
Yeah, who talks that way? They bought an apartment from you, so who cares what they do? Then women not driving.
No, I just mean I get along with all of them. There's a degree of
You mean them-ing them?
He's them-ing them,
Yes.
Yeah, I get, Those rich Browns.
Yeah, and as we pointed out with the Pocahontas thing, he said, I will give you $1 million if you take a DNA test to prove you're an Indian.
Right,
That's what they voted for.
And then said last night, no, I didn't check that.
Exactly. So anyway, look, this is one of the frustrating things. The reason we recount all of this business dealing stuff is not to show that he lied when he said he doesn't have business dealings. It does show that, but that's not the point. The point is he is conflicted in terms of what our foreign policy dealings should be vis-a-vis Saudi Arabia. When we were concerned before the inauguration about him not divesting himself from his business, this is exactly the sort of situation that we were worried about. That his interests would be running diametrically opposed to the interests of the United States because of his longstanding business dealings with these people. And likely his future business dealings as well.
Yeah, and the biggest one there is the 2015, the hotel in Jeddah. I mean, the stuff before, selling your yacht in 2001 to, or 1991, whatever it was, to a Saudi prince, that bothers me or concerns me, even if we remove the Trump part and that everything he does bothers me and should bother every sentient American. But that would be... that would be of concern in any case, right? I mean, that would be of little concern. Obviously, if you have a past dealing where you sold something and that transaction's over, I don't know that that impacts his decisions now. As a candidate, that he still was looking to build a hotel there, and I don't know the status of that, but that's of greater concern. And of course he has business interests in Saudi Arabia because of the thing he said. They spend $40 or $50 million. Why wouldn't I want to?
I get along with all of them.
Right, I get along with all of them.
And that will continue. And so right now, as we're wondering, will we continue to sell billions and billions of dollars of weapons to the Saudi regime? Will we continue to aid them in their war against Yemen when they are going around the world murdering dissidents and journalists? It seems likely that we will continue to. And we will have to wonder, is this something that, you know, absent the business dealings, Trump, a terrible person, just would have done anyway? Or is he doing this because he wants to make sure that later on in life, he will continue to be able to build properties in Saudi Arabia? That is a concern that we have to have. And one final point, Jamal Khashoggi was supposed to be a participant in the Gulf International Forum. It had previously been scheduled. Obviously, he will not be able to go there since the Saudi regime killed him. He was going to be on a panel called Free Speech and Expression, Suppressed or Triumphant, which really just clarifies the whole thing. Anyway, we're going to take another break. When we come back, big poll, who do people favor in the Democratic primary in 2020? And what does that tell us about the likely conflicts politically that we're going to have over the next few years after this? Welcome back, everyone. So with that, I want to turn away from the news of the day to how things might develop once we're past this midterm election. Obviously, we have our concerns about how the midterms are actually going to go. We've been talking about this on the show today. And the idea that this thing's in the bag and like, yay, things are getting better. I have this like feeling in my gut.
Do you know when you go to the beach?
It's not like, a good feeling.
I don't surf. But you go to the beach.
Really?
Yeah, I know. That's probably a surprise. I seem like a surfer. If I took off my shirt, you'd be like, oh, that guy totally surfs. But you go to the beach and, you know, and you get in the ocean and the waves are exciting. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't even really body surf anymore because I'm terrified I'll get paralyzed. But I like to dump. That's been like a thing I've been paranoid about since I was like 9, right?
Wow.
Oh, you body surf. You break your back.
There's so many things that are more likely to break your back than body surfing.
No, there aren't. So, but you know, you like to jump over the wave, and then you go to a place where people say, oh, the waves are big there, and you get there, and you're like, these waves are kind of disappointing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, get ready for November 6th.
Yeah. God, fingers crossed, man. Just everybody vote, and I know that they're trying to make you not vote. Check your registration. Like, have that be like brush your teeth. You know, drink enough water, check your registration.
But I mean, more than anything else, I mean, it's that, you know, we talked about it beforehand, a little bit before the election about, you know, and why the judges matter. Because it's not enough to say the Supreme Court. The reason you talk about the Supreme Court is because the Supreme Court can protect the right of people to vote, right? Yeah. Not just the Supreme Court, but all these judges. I mean, the number of Trump judges, what, 25% of the federal judiciary now are Trump judges.
It's crazy.
And he's got 2 years left at a minimum, probably. Or his friend Mikey does. What's happening in North Dakota and Georgia, again, I mean, and this is almost every, it's like climate change. Like, How are we not talking about this 100% of the time? They just decide.
Our guest later on today is going to talk about some of the voter suppression.
Yeah, we just repeat that more than anything to all the people who said that election didn't matter. That's why it matters more than. And there's nothing to me that matters more than making sure everybody is that voting is easy and encouraging, and that everyone can do it who is a citizen of the United States. Everybody should be able to vote, and nobody should be able to suppress it. And the Supreme Court ought to rule in every single one of these cases, like Brown versus Board of Education, 9-0. Nope, you can't do this. Anything that makes it harder to vote, we are going to rule against.
Except now, that is changing.
Of course, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
So look, we're going to try to get past the midterms, but 2020, what do people think is likely to happen based on some of the changing politics of the day? The public is split over whether they think President Trump will win a second term. 46% say he will, and 47% say that he won't. That is actually an improvement since March for him, back when 54% of adults said they thought he'd lose his bid for a second term. So a bit of that optimism fading away. But more importantly, if he is going to win or he's going to lose, it's going to come down to who is running against him. And so 2 years out from an election, yes, polls generally don't mean that much. But they don't mean nothing necessarily, and here is how it's looking. Amongst many potential contenders, right now, Joe Biden is at 33% amongst Democratic voters. Bernie Sanders.
Democratic voters and Democratic leaning independents.
Yes. So when you put all of them together, Biden has got a pretty big lead. Kamala Harris is doing better than she had in some of the previous polling that I've seen, trailing Bernie by 4, actually beating Elizabeth Warren. We put the lower ones there just to clarify a few things. People don't support Michael Avenatti, so Bill Maher, relax. That's not a thing. Beto O'Rourke has 4 times the support. Even John Kerry there. John Kerry, don't even think about it. Don't even look at it, okay? You had your chance. You failed. Get out of here. But the Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders thing is certainly something. Obviously, there is a name recognition thing to that, although Bernie Sanders does not have no name recognition at this point. And the lead between the gap between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders is not nearly as big as the gap between Hillary and Bernie would have been at this same time.
Was at the same time.
What's
I mean,
that?
Was at the same time. I mean, there were polls then. Hillary was up around 60.
Exactly.
At this point.
It was a gigantic lead. Not just in terms of absolute numbers. She had such a huge percentage of the vote, but Bernie was so low at this point. Yeah. The gap is far smaller. I mean, based on your experience, how do you see that shaking out?
Two things. First of all, I don't think we should be talking about it. I really don't, like this close to the midterms, but I got it.
Do you know why I'm talking about it?
Right. Because
great fear,
right? Sure,
and just terror at what's going on, and the hope that things will be better next time.
Yeah, I got it. I think the poll numbers are fine for Joe Biden. He's the vice president of a very popular president, right? Mm-hmm. Among Democrats and Democratic leaning independents who took the poll, so that's not surprising that he's ahead. I don't think it's a catastrophe if Joe Biden is the nominee, just in terms of ability to win. You know, I think he'd have won in 2016. I think that Bernie would have won in 2016. I think almost anybody would have won in 2016.
Mm-hmm. So you think Biden against Trump in his reelection bid has a good chance of winning?
I do. I think he's great. I think almost any Democrat has a great chance of winning. And I think Biden is a tough campaigner and, you know, and has a great personal story and is a fighter and is a scrapper. It wouldn't be my choice, but I don't think it's a catastrophe. I think the poll numbers are potentially alarming if you're Bernie Sanders. After what happened in 2016, you were by far the most frequent guest on Sunday talk shows. Your face was out there more than any other politician in America in many ways. I know there's a whole school, there's a narrative that the mainstream media shunned Bernie. It's just BS.
Well, I would say that they did earlier on in that first primary.
But from the middle of 2015 through the election, nobody was on the Sunday shows more. He got pretty favorable coverage. You can find stuff that they were dismissive of him, and no question. And the Hillary people tried to make it seem like he's a crazy crank, and so did the DNC. That's all true, right? Mm-hmm. But that said, he was out there and he made his case, and he should be. That bummer would bum you. If Biden led him 33-24. 28, I'd be like, that's fine. Bernie's fine. But that's a pretty low number. 1 in 8 Democrats And thinking that that's the guy, if he plans, if he's, you know, obviously, he's, it seems he's going to run.
It seems like he doesn't want to talk about it, obviously, and I understand why. What's interesting is that even amongst independents who say they lean to the Democratic Party, sticking to there, Biden is currently leading, although the gap is only 10 points there. Look, I think everything you're saying is true, but I do think he's starting in a better position vis-a-vis the supposed front runner than he was the last time around. I think he's going to be able to raise a tremendous amount of money. I think that he now will start off with inroads in the media that he didn't have before. So the reason I want to talk about it, or we have been talking about it, is just because, and this is based on the conversation we've been having about how things could possibly go, it is so important who gets the nomination.
Yeah,
Nothing is more important at this
point.
My
instinct tells me, and my instinct told me there's no chance Donald Trump will be the nominee of the president, so, you know, keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. And I would say it again, too. is that neither of them will be the nominee. And Bernie's, the difference this time is that Bernie was fighting a fight there, and he was the only guy fighting that fight in mm-hmm. that. Others will be fighting that fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, you may not believe them. You may think that Kamala Harris is and that some of her policies undermine that argument that she's going to make. A lot of people will think that about Cory Booker. People will think it about Kirsten Gillibrand. But they're all going to be, and I'm leaving out Elizabeth Warren, who actually mm-hmm. does own some of that space. All four of those people, if they run, are going to own a lot of that space. Hell, Michael Bloomberg's going to own some of that space if he runs. So it's going to be a lot tougher for Bernie to be the only guy talking about income inequality.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot I'd like to say, but we do have to move on. Obviously, we're going to be talking about this a lot over the next couple of years, so get ready for that. We do have to take a break, though. When we come back, we're going to be joined by a new guest, Skyping in Dave Leventhal of the Center for Public Integrity. His new series, Abandoned in America, profiling worsening poverty in a number of different cities across the country. We'll be talking about that reporting after this. Of course, this summer, the Center for Public Integrity sent its reporters to 6 different communities across the country to report on situations where poverty is not just lingering, but in fact even worsening. And joining us now to break down this reporting, we have Dave Leventhal, federal politics editor and senior reporter. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be with you.
Very glad to have you here. So obviously, this reporting that your group is doing, very wide in breadth geographically as well as topically. Can you talk us a little bit through what the overall mission of this project was?
Well, at the Center for Public Integrity, we so often focus on big money in politics, super PACs, the billionaires who are dumping money into both sides in a midterm election like this. So we wanted to do something that might have been a little idiosyncratic for ourselves, but look at the people who didn't have money across the country, but yet still had profound needs and a profound desire to engage in the political process and get something from their government that they felt like they weren't getting. And it was different for all the different communities that we first explored. And we looked at dozens and dozens of places around the country and ultimately vetted our list down to 6 places. And we felt that these places were very representative of the struggles that many Americans are having right now in an economy that the president is telling us time and time again is one of the best that we've ever had in the nation. And that poverty, well, you know, the war on it that we've been waging for decades, it's largely over. But yet, when you talk to so many people in these communities, they feel something very different than what the president and what the White House or people in Washington here would sometimes like to have you believe.
I'd like to ask you about a couple of the individual reports. You've been releasing them in a rolling fashion throughout the summer. The first that you have profiled is in Presidio, Texas. And this is a community being affected by the debate and construction around the wall. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, Presidio, probably nobody's ever been there except if you have gone to the Big Bend region of Texas. I worked in Texas for the Dallas Morning News for 7 years and visited several times and always found it to be a very odd place, incredibly isolated, but a population of about 4,000 people. Our reporter, Suhana Hussein, who went down there and spent a great deal of time with people in Presidio, Texas, while she was there, found it to be a community that was so incredibly reliant on its cross-border Mexican sister city, a place called Ojinaga, Mexico. And even for daily necessities of life, groceries, healthcare, if you get sick, if you get hurt, people in Presidio find themselves having to go to Mexico to get their needs met because of the isolation there and because it takes, you know, oftentimes an hour or two or more to just get those needs met. Bottom line for Presidio is that people there are very, very afraid of what would happen if a wall was built on the border, specifically through their own town. They feel like it would cut them off from not only the necessities that they have in Mexico that they rely on, but also too from a community that they don't see divided by a border. They see it as almost a whole cloth kind of situation where the people of Ojinaga, the people of Presidio, even though one is in one country and one is in the other, they see themselves as one community. And they definitely don't want a border wall or the money that would be spent on a border wall going toward that. They say, hey, we have many, many other needs. We are very deep in poverty. We need those needs met with federal government assistance and help that would help us in a very different way.
Yeah, I'm glad that you profiled that, because I think very often the conversation about the economic, I guess, connection between the U.S. and Mexico is one of exploitation. That's what the Republicans want to focus on. But that situation in Presidio is fairly common across much of the Texas border, where there's a free-flowing, you know, people go across the border to shop and things like that, and that could, of course, be hurt. I did want to ask you about Standing Rock, where one of your profiles has to do with new attempts to suppress the vote. How is that being done?
So Carrie Levine, a reporter on our team, spent time up there this summer, and our story, which published just last week, just on Friday, we'd encourage you to read it at publicintegrity.org. It goes into great depth about the both historical and much more recent aspects of what's happening in terms of political participation in Standing Rock. When you think of Standing Rock, you might think of what happened a couple of years ago with the pipeline protests that were taking place there. But what we found, what Carrie specifically found, was that here in a state which has a lot of power per vote there, it's a very small state and yet is represented by two senators, just like anywhere else. There's a very competitive race there. Heidi Heitkamp, the Democratic incumbent, she's down in the polls right now. And the people of Standing Rock, because of a court wrangling or court battle that has been wrangling through the court system just recently, they're very afraid that they're not going to have quite the same ability to vote as other people in North Dakota because of certain ID regulations that have been put in place several years ago. And there are some people who simply live on reservations there who don't have physical addresses. And that's one of the requirements that is coming about as a result of some of these new rules. Now, there are mitigating elements, and county officials and state officials have said, look, there are other ways for people to vote if they don't have quite the proper identification that we're asking for. But there's a lot of concern and a lot of worry that people who are Native Americans in North Dakota are going to be disenfranchised in some way as a result of this battle that has been going on.
Yeah, certainly a story that we see echoed in other parts of the country. Well, Dave Leventhal, thank you both for your series, this work that you're doing, many of these stories not being talked about in other parts of the media. So thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you. That series is Abandoned in America, by the way. You can find it online. Many of the reports are already out, some still to come. So feel free to take a look at that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the latest in our installment of our series, Garbage People, Piers Morgan has earned his spot. You'll see why. Between where we're at as a people and as a world and where we desperately need to be are some truly awful people that we profile in Garbage People. Oh, we've got a great garbage person for you today. This is Piers Morgan. I don't know if you know him. You can tell from the photo he's a tough guy because he's got his fist raised because he might punch the photographer at any moment.
Yeah, let me tell you what's about to happen to Piers in that photo. He's about to get, his nose is about to be broken.
And not for the first time either, I would guess. So he's a tough guy, as we said, and so he can evaluate how tough other guys are, even guys that you might think are tough. And he did that recently on Twitter, saying with this photo of Daniel Craig, actor, oh, 007, not you as well, hashtag papoose, hashtag emasculated Bond.
Look at that loser.
Look at that loser, international man of mystery.
Carrying his young baby around town close to his body so that the baby feels secure and loved warm. And safe. What a huge douche.
Oh my, didn't immediately abandon his kids?
Yeah.
What a lame beta.
Yeah.
So I think that's laughable, right? Obviously. It's James Bond. If anyone has earned a little bit of, you know, whether you like the particular form of masculinity that James Bond represents in the modern day, It's certainly a form of masculinity.
Also, he's with Rachel Weisz, and she had this kid at like she's in her upper 40s. Like mm-hmm. It's a bit of a miracle that they had the kid. And don't mock him and the kid. If you don't like Rachel Weisz and Daniel Craig, there is something seriously wrong. If that's not a couple that you root for, a celebrity couple who you're rooting for, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, she's awesome. And he's awesome.
He's
pretty awesome, too.
Yeah, they're awesome.
And so that was pretty obvious. And so he was scorned on the internet. So
can I hit you with Justin Chang's?
What's that?
Because I saw it yesterday and I just liked it. He said, imagine seeing this beautiful photo and tweeting imbecilic garbage. Interesting. Imbecilic garbage rather than Bambino Royale. Which I think pretty good. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Okay, I wasn't going to go that clever, but yeah. I do want to profile some other clever people. So if the papoose is not man enough, True Blue has come up with this, the baby holster.
Yeah,
so
that's
if you need to draw your baby quick, you know, you could do that there. Is that really, that's not a thing? Because he didn't make that image. I guess that's really a thing.
Justin Chang also came up with a star as Bjorn.
Stars Bjorn, that's pretty good.
Good too. He got two good ones.
So coming to Daniel Craig's rescue, not that he needs it, he doesn't care about Piers Morgan. Chris Evans, also another man, who's working with Daniel Craig in an indie later on this year, said, you really have to be so uncertain of your own masculinity to concern yourself with how another man carries his child. Any man who wastes time quantifying masculinity is terrified on the inside. That's what he said. And by the way, it wasn't just men coming to his defense. You also had women. And it really came, the defense, in two different forms. So Amy Semensky demonstrates the first form, saying, I see a loving father. But I would say at least as common were comments like Amy Hernandez's, looks like a hot dad. Mm-hmm. That's very popular, yeah.
Jesse McLaren, yes, Piers, it's called a baby. I can see why you're confused. You only get one if a woman...
So he, by the way, has continued on. He's been tweeting all morning. Some people are saying, you know, obviously lots of dads do this. It's totally normal. He says they're only doing it because their wives and girlfriends told them to. So look, but before we proceed with our commentary, I've been waiting to do this. So I'm just going to put, if I could just put this here, he's a garbage person. He belongs in the garbage. And I'm just don't come out of there for a while. You are in both garbage timeout and masculinity timeout. I'm sick of guys like that.
Yeah,
it's so just pathetic. Jesus Christ. And they're not even generally, like, if you're at least, you know, like, you look like you take remotely any care of yourself, maybe that would bolster your argument slightly. It would still be nonsensical. But we have serious challenges as a country that we are facing, as a world that we're facing. I understand he's not from the U.S., but people in the U.K. hate him even more. And this is the sort of BS, I would say, that is holding us back. That women generally suppressed by men, and then men internally oppressed by the worst examples of our gender.
Yeah, you're totally right. And like, they're only doing it because their wives or girlfriends told them to. So effing what?
Mm-hmm.
I do things all the time that my wife and my girlfriend tell me to do, right? I mean, I listen to both of them. And they're like, no, of course I do things that my wife tells me to do, because she's caring and thoughtful and smart and is filled with good ideas. Mm-hmm. And one of them would be, we have a baby. I got news for you. Carrying a baby 9 blocks, no matter what they weigh, mm-hmm. by block 8, you're like, boy, my shoulder is burning, mm-hmm. right? And if you put it like you put it here, you move your arms, it feels great, and the baby's right there. It's insane. It's insane to say you do things because your wife or girlfriend mm-hmm. told you to.
And that is a bad thing.
Right, of course you do. And you know what else happens? They do things you tell them to. Mm-hmm. It's called a relationship, right?
He's unfamiliar with the concept. And also, here's a possibility. Maybe Daniel Craig just likes walking around with his kid. Maybe he loves his kid. I know it's weird. It doesn't really fit with the character, I suppose. But maybe he likes his kid, and he likes having his kid around with him.
Of course he does! The baby Bjorn, or whatever that is a great invention. It's lovely. Look at him. He's got his hands. He could have a Starbucks in one hand, and if he needed to, he could...
A Walter PPK in the other.
Right, he could take out his Walter PPK and put one between the eyes as some jackbag from Spectre. Boom! Like, what a great day!
Yeah. It's just pathetic. Right. And the thing is, I'm not a baby, you know, to quote our president. I get how this works. I understand how this whole thing works. Piers Morgan is rich and famous. not despite inane comments like this where he gets dunked on by the whole internet, but because of comments like this. He says something stupid attacking Daniel Craig, knowing that millions of reasonable people will attack him back, including in segments like this, and we are talking about Piers Morgan, someone who, aside from the horrendous things that he says on a regular basis, doesn't merit coverage. He gets talked about because he's off. No, once they go in the garbage, they're not supposed to get out of the garbage. Are you gonna rip him?
Right, by the way, this is not cardboard. This was glass. Ripped glass.
He didn't break it.
You know why?
Ripped it.
You know why? Because I'm a man.
You're a man.
I'm a man.
Daniel Craig probably would have used some
sort of
knife.
Can I do the four?
You can do the four.
I don't think so.
Okay. It's tough.
Well, screw Daniel Craig.
Emasculated
bond. I could have if I had a little more time.
Everybody, tonight we're going to be doing live coverage of the Beto O'Rourke debate.
Yes!
A little bit later. Okay, thank you. I got to clean that up later. Tune in tonight, 8:45 Eastern time at tyt.com/members live. If you're not already a member, you can go to tyt.com/signup. Become a member. Cenk and I are going to be breaking down the debate today. Thank you, Ben, for joining us. Great to have you on. Thank you for watching. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.